Blog Talk Radio. Hello, and welcome to CoHealth Checkup, a monthly radio show that focuses on workplace wellness trends and benefits of all type. My name is Fran Melmed, and I am one of your CoHealth Checkup co-hosts. I own the consulting firm Context, and help employers and employees make better health and healthcare decisions. You can find me at Twitter at F.E. Melmed, and I'm also available online at contextcommunication.com. I'm joined today by my co-host, Carol Harnett.
Thanks, Fran. Hi, as Fran said, I'm Carol Harnett, and I am indeed Fran's co-conspirator at CoHealth and a health, disability, and employee benefits consultant, speaker, and writer. I'm also the president of the Council for Disability Awareness, and you can find me at the Twitter handle at Carol Harnett. I also write the employee benefits column for Human Resource Executive. And I am here to say that Fran and I are so excited to be doing this show because when we first conceived of the idea of taking CoHealth from a tweet chat platform to experimenting with radio, we joked about being like the Car Talk guys and just talking about trends. And we don't regret at all that we've done these wonderful shows with incredible people, and it's been fabulous. But this was often what we thought we would do. So I'm going to introduce the first topic we're going to talk about. We are going to take callers for people who want to call in. And that number for callers is 818-572-4923. But Fran and I want to kick off this show with caregiving. And caregiving, for me personally, which I've shared on the show, and for people who read some of my writing, know I have recently gotten out of a caregiving situation with not the ends that you want. My mom passed away about a year and a half ago. But I can tell you how difficult and onerous it was from a work perspective. I don't regret a moment of what I did for my mom, but I learned a lot of lessons for how caregiving will impact the workplace. I'm going to let Fran talk about her situation, but I'm going to set her up by saying that CNN's Sanjay Gupta on January 5th wrote a column on America's 9 biggest health issues. 3 in particular probably will most appeal to this audience, but one of the ones that caught my eye was caregiving for the aging population, and leading with a statistic that between 2000 and 2030, people 65 and over are going to increase by 101%, yet family members, the number of family members who can provide care, will only go up by 25%. So we've already known that this is a huge problem. He did also mention 2 other things that might be interesting later on in the show. He did talk about work-life balance, and will the millennials be enough to shift us back to some form of balance. And he also talked about apps and tech and how much is too much and what about privacy. And as we're in day 3 of the Consumer Electronics Show, that might be an interesting point as well. But Fran, I'm going to have you actually talk about caregiving and how it's impacting you right now.
Great. Thanks a lot, Carol. Well, as Carol was dealing with her own caregiving issues, I think some of you are aware that I also entered into this world that more and more are stepping into. In August 2013, at the same time, we learned that my mother was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer and my sister-in-law was stage 2 breast cancer. I'm happy to report that my sister-in-law has recovered through her treatment and surgery. My mother's on ongoing treatment and facing it with a grace that I don't know how she musters. But as Carol alluded to, and here's where we want to begin, going into a caregiving mode stresses a number of things. First of all, it stresses you. But from a perspective of those of us who work in this industry, it stresses the needs of the individual and the needs of the organization, and how can these two work compatibly together through a period of intense crisis and sometimes an extended period of crisis so that individuals are able to do what they need to do while simultaneously staying committed to work in a way that could feed their soul, give them an alternative place to focus some energy and take a break in some regards? And how can employers create the space that's necessary mentally and physically, as well as emotionally, while not losing the productivity that, of course, is at their heart and soul? And those were some of the things that I started thinking about as I entered this this new role and responsibility. As an independent consultant, I have some luxuries about flexibility that, as Carol alluded to, you know, companies may not afford people. We're seeing a change in workplace flexibility and the policies of employers and the amount of workplace flexibility and the ways in which they're providing it to employees. And so that, to me, raises our first question. How do employers support the needs of this growing body of population? And I see we have two calls. So, Carol, I think that you probably want to respond to one, and then we'll bring a caller in.
Yeah, absolutely, Fran. And I'm going to say, so very well summarized, and people should also know that Fran is handling this with extreme grace and wonderful support of her family, and particularly her mom in this crisis, but as well as your children and your husband and all of those people that are involved.
Thank you. I am lucky.
And they are lucky to have you. And I will say, I think because I've talked so openly about my own situation, including what my mom's death taught me, which I actually do use the correct word now, is what I've learned, is to, if we're going to talk about this, we have to talk about the real stuff, which is it's not passing away, it is dying. Mm-hmm. I have been asked to consult strategically with some EAP vendors. Because they do recognize that they are often pointed at as the entity that should be helping their employees. And what they're realizing is giving people a list of places to go or local counselors to speak to often isn't enough. And so one of the things I said to them is, like, here's the bottom line. I said, I don't need a list of places that my mom might to go to temporarily for rehab. I need you to make the phone call. I need you to vet it out for me because I don't have time. So with that, I caller we're going to bring on is going to be Kevin Sipnewski. Now for our listeners, in fact, let me click him on here. Kevin Sipnewski, is that you?
Yes, it is.
We were just starting to introduce.
Can you hear me?
I can, and so can Fran.
Hello.
Listeners, we had Kevin on our show more than a year ago. The topic was caregiving, which Kevin has really invested a good part of his career, particularly his career, on addressing. And Kevin, you still remain one of our most popular shows. People still listen to that show. So Fran and I were just talking about introducing the topic of caregiving by talking about our personal situations, which is really what drove our attention to the topic of caregiving. In addition to the fact, we did read the statistic that's being bantied about by a number of people, including Sanjay Gupta and AARP, that between 2000 and 2030, that we're going to have a 101% increase in people over the age of 65, but only a 25% increase in family members who can take care of them. So, Kevin, what would you like to add to our discussion on caregiving, and particularly caregiving and employers?
Well, I think, go ahead.
No, and particularly caregiving and employers.
You were going to say particularly, yeah.
Caregiving
well,
and
I
employers.
Well, I thank you both for talking about it, because I think that's really the biggest thing we can start with. And both of you have taught me a lot by just learning and listening to the things you go through and have been through, because while everybody's situation is somewhat different, there's also a whole lot of connectivity between what people go through. And I think our hesitancy to talk about that in the workplace with our, you know, coworkers, with our boss, and sometimes with our best friends and sometimes with our family, it really hurts the situation, because there is so much we can learn from each other, and there's people that are willing to help or have been through what we're going through and have great ideas and great solutions that you might not find in a book.
Mm. Well said. So, Kevin, you speak to employees all the time, you know, about this topic of caregiving. Obviously, you lead in as well to the sort of normal follow-up, which is the topic of long-term care insurance, which, by the way, after my mom died, I actually did buy a long-term care insurance policy. It took a while, but I figured it out. What is it that you find that is most on employees' minds when they're thinking about their parent or their child or their spouse and they're in a caregiving situation? And what do you see employers doing anything to try to help answer that?
Well, I think the what we see most all too often is that employees hit a wall. Again, before they reach out for help, before they start talking about it, and they don't get that they're caregiving for the first several years that they're caregiving. I mean, it was just, I was, in fact, talking to a long-term care insurance salesperson about what is really caregiving, and at the end of the discussion, she said, you know what, I am dumbfounded. I am in this industry for a living. And based on what you're telling me, I've been caregiving for my parents for 2 years now and didn't consider it caregiving. And
mm-hmm.
I think
that's very interesting, because I think that we do have a perspective on at what point do you tip into that? You know, is it just helping with some technology glitches, or is when you're in full bore health emergency mode? I'm going to, Kevin, while you answer that, I'm going to bring in our next caller.
Too. Okay. We're going to keep you on the line,
I think
though, Kevin.
Okay.
Go ahead.
That's the biggest challenge is we don't reach out until it is an emergency. And it's, you know, there's so much, whether you liken it to any situation, there's so much maintenance and preventative maintenance, just like our own health, so much can be done earlier, better, sooner. And make it easier so that, you know, you've made the home safe and mom doesn't have that fall. And then it becomes the medical caregiving emergency we all think of when we think of caregiving, you know, with the bathing, dressing, support, and mom with a broken hip. There were some fabulous articles in December that I can send over to you in the New York Times about falls mm-hmm. and fall prevention. And they had some videos on there that really helped you understand, you know, mom can't see what you thought she could see, or dad can't, and we won't be able to either. And I think one of the most interesting perspectives we've had is the thought that when our teenagers do something silly, we all go, oh, yeah, I was a teenager once. I remember that lapse in judgment that we all have as adolescents. When our parents are doing things silly or being stubborn and not listening to us or doing all these things, we can't say, oh, I remember when I was 80, I was the same way. Guess what? We're going to be the same way. We're going to fight for our independence. We're not going to listen to our kids. We just don't have the perspective yet that we should have.
Great. Thanks,
Absolutely.
Kevin. Let me just invite area code 860. You have joined our Open Mic CoHealth Radio show. Can you introduce yourself?
Sure, yeah. This is Tracy Foster at Anthem.
Hi, Tracy.
Friends with Carol. Hi.
She is.
Yes, I
well,
am.
Thank you for calling.
Absolutely.
So we've been talking
what
about...
What did you want to comment? Oh, go ahead, Carol.
And I don't know if you've called to add to the caregiving discussion or if you want to throw in something else for us to talk about.
Oh, are you talking to me?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. No. Well, now that you've mentioned it, I mean, what I would probably add to something you said earlier, Carol, and you're somewhat familiar with the situation that I'm in with my mom and dad, and what would be so helpful for me is to have some sort of a, you know, sort of a concierge type of service available to me, that someone who could, like I said, make the phone calls to the doctors, take, you know, mom and dad to the appointments when I can't, you know, take the time off from work, make the phone calls to the various, you know, adult living places to try to figure out what do we need to do to get them, you know, into, you know, out of their home and into a different place. You know, make the call to the VA center to try to get all those benefits. I mean, that's the challenge. Like, I know what I need to do. I just don't have time to do it.
Mm-hmm. What I find really interesting, so you, the two of you and Kevin, you as well, are going to some of the practical logistical things that we need to tackle in a caregiving mode. Now, I'm in a different place, and I hope some others that are listening to it call in and share their experiences. My mother doesn't need care yet or need logistical support of the nature that you're talking about. There's nobody that I can call to solve what I was looking at from August till I would say about 8 months in. So for about 8 months, I was in that anticipatory grieving phase. And for those of you who haven't been there yet, that's basically a fog you enter as you consider the loss of this loved one before the actual loss. And I found that to be very debilitating from a mental perspective, from focus. And I don't know how employers support that. I've thought about mentoring. I've thought about job sharing, something that's really in decline right now for most employers. And just basically having that time flexibility also to be able to do your job when you're most acutely aware and focused and able to. That's also in decline in most employers. So this is what I was grappling with, which is different and as much a need, I think, as what you're talking about. And while you guys talk about that, let me also welcome our next caller.
Yeah, you know, what I'll add, and Kevin, I'll ask you to comment in case you know the name of this company. But I know in so I'm going to talk more from my perspective, which, by the way, thank you, Fran, for bringing up the emotional part, because, by the way, while you're trying to get things done for your parents, you are dealing with some emotional stuff. You're dealing with, in my case, my healthy, independent, cognitively just fine mother who now is in a small medical crisis, and how do I start to downsize my business so that I can attend to her, and what does that mean? You know, you become closer to losing your parent. There's a piece to touch that. But Kevin, I know in Hawaii, and I'm sure this exists in other places, there is an agency there that some employers are using to actually go to doctor's appointments with the employee's parent or spouse or child while they're still at work, particularly if it's a more of a routine appointment, so that they're there as a healthcare professional, they're there to let you still work. Are you aware of the agency that I'm talking of, and have you seen services like that?
Yes. Well, I think you mean Ho'okele.
Exactly.
But I also would assume most home care companies, you know, would or could, or maybe the more progressive ones would, you know, set up something like that, or a geriatric care manager, you know, the likes of, you know, Dr. Marion and you know, some of the ones that are trying to do more full service for folks. I think that's a great idea, and what you'll find is the parents will listen to that other person better than the child as well. Back to that, you know, why won't my parents listen to me discussion. So I think that's a great idea, and again, I think, but people don't reach out for support until too late, when, you know, you couldn't, you know, you didn't have the geriatric care manager help when things were minor. Now you're calling out when it's, you know, major.
Right. And we just let in to our call yet another caller. Do you want to identify yourself?
Yes. Hi, it's Fred. Fred Schott. and this is kind of interesting. Full disclosure, Tracy is my manager, and she's well aware of my caregiving issues. In terms of, it's been about 18 months now since well, more than 18 months, actually. It's been 2 years since I've been very actively involved in my mother's care situation. Mom is, she turned 90 last September. She has a multitude of health issues, but on top of it all, probably the biggest issue is she has dementia, not Alzheimer's related. I think it's related to her atrial fibrillation, congestive heart failure. It's vascular in nature, I believe. But she was two years ago in December, she was living on her own in Florida, and then she passed out, fell. One of her neighbors found her, and one thing after another happened where it was clear she couldn't live on her own anymore. And after spending some time in Florida with her, getting her set up with some home health care situation, we kind of made the decision, which I kind of pushed a little bit more heavily than I would ordinarily do, to have her move to Connecticut to be in a continuum care facility that's not that far from my home. And so she is there now. The bulk of the actual day-to-day caregiving tasks have been basically I've outsourced them to the community, the continuum care facility. But the reality is I'm her advocate. I'm her, you know, she's granted me a number of years ago before all of this happened, power of attorney, healthcare decision maker and the like. And well, the other factor is I have no siblings, so it's basically me. But you know, I'm there. I'm very mindful of the fact that, you know, I'm her advocate, I'm her care coordinator, and even though I'm not doing the nuts and bolts work, and that is done very capably by the people at the continuum care facility, somebody's still got to, you know, take the larger picture and, you know, look at her, you know, finances, other, you know, other plans, and just to make sure that the care that she is getting is, you know, is appropriate, and you know, that she still, notwithstanding the progressive dementia, still has her basic human dignity that's in place and is respected. So
Fred,
yeah,
when you consider this journey, from your perspective as an employee, and I realize that Tracy's is still on the phone, what have you needed most from your employer to be able to both continue doing your work and continue in your role as a son?
Yep. Well, two factors which I've needed and I have gotten absolutely, you know, in an absolutely good fashion. Number one, obviously, flexibility. You know, it helps that my job is one that does not require me to come into the office. I do have some schedule flexibility, provided, of course, that I meet my basic deliverables. But within that, I was able to spend an entire month in Florida to, you know, basically live at my mother's condo and do my work from there. So I had that, number one. But number two, which is important, is, you know, a immediate manager who gets your situation. Now, in Tracy's case, obviously she gets it because she's going through something very similar herself. I think, you know, her mom, if I'm not mistaken, is maybe just a couple of months older than my mom, and actually they have the same first name. Isn't that bizarre? But you know, I'm convinced, though, that even independently of the fact that, you know, if she weren't going through that same thing personally, I think, you know, just based on what I've seen in other circumstances, you know, she's someone who has the capacity to understand other people's situations. I've seen that in a number of times with respect to other people on our team. So, you know, the two things, flexibility and then I hesitate to use the word empathy because that carries some baggage with it, but for some people. But you know, just the ability to, you know, to get, to understand, and to you know, to appreciate, you know, the situation that the person is, and to realize and understand it's a part of being a person. It's a part of being human. You know, we're going to have all of these issues. We're not machines.
Yeah, I think that is a really good point. I think the flexibility is something that's key and keenly felt by a number of people. We'd be a little remiss if we didn't recognize that workplace flexibility for certain roles is really challenging. We, on the phone right now, don't probably represent that that segment, but we have a caller from 610 area code. I'm going to bring them on and see what they have to add to this conversation as well. Hello, you're on Co-Health Checkup. Hello, 610, are you there?
Okay. Well, we'll keep going. Maybe 610 will either identify or we'll drop off. We'll try to monitor it. If you can't hear us, maybe you need to unmute your phone. But, you know, it is interesting that we didn't plan this just for people who are listening, but we do actually have a person who's a manager and their employee. So, Tracy, I mean, obviously Fred's represented you really well, but from your side, what is that like to actually have an employee who's in this situation, and do you have resources available to you that are helpful at all, other than what you can do to help Fred do what he needs to do and still work?
Yeah, good question. Thank you, Fred. That was very nice of you. I know this was not planned at all, but so
no, it wasn't.
No, but it is interesting.
No, I
doubted
myself. You know what I'm doing on my lunch hour.
Yeah, I know. Well, I think one of the things that Fred said, which I think is, I mean, flexibility obviously is important, but more above and beyond that, I really do think it's a matter of, do you work for someone or for a company that gets it, who really understands? And it's different than dealing with childcare issues. And I think that's the challenge that we have, is that, you know, I have a lot of employees, and Fred knows them, they're on our team, who are dealing with a lot of childcare issues. And that has its own sort of, you know, challenges as a manager, and people taking the time off to deal with kids. Stuff, the kids programs and stuff like that. But adult care, elder care, parents is a whole other level of complexity, because it's not only dealing with illnesses and doctor's appointments, it's dealing with financial situations and living arrangements. And it's really important to be able to talk to somebody who gets it. I think that's one of the things that benefits Fred and I. We both are dealing with it. We get it. We understand what's going on. I'm not sure the rest of people on our team understand what we're really dealing with. And I think the challenge, I couldn't tell you if there's any other resources within my company. I'm sure there are other resources. My frustration and that I found in sort of reaching out to other resources is they sort of give you the same information that I already have.
Mm-hmm.
I already have this information from my own research. The issue is I don't have the time to do the work, you know, to make all the phone calls. That's what I'm looking for. Like, I have the list of places to call. I have the, you know, and so if I talk to the EAP or I talk to, you know, they just give me more lists. I'm like, that's great. I need somebody to do it.
Right.
You know, I need somebody to help take on some of that responsibility for me. And I'll pay for it. If they offered a service that we had to pay for, I would gladly do it at this point, you know. But that's what I think is missing. It's, you know, we have the information, and Anthem does a great job with providing information. It's just, it's taking the next step that's challenging. And so, you know, we make it work, right? You and I, Fred, we figure out, you know, Fred knows just yesterday I had to leave for an hour to go take my mom to the doctor, and I'm doing phone calls with my manager on my way home. And fortunately, he understands it. But I think it's really, you got to understand what it's like in an elder care situation as opposed to a child care situation.
That's a great point. And Kevin, I want to bring you back in, because this is still the topic of caregiving, but we, in one of our conversations, and I can't remember if it was on air or if in a different conversation, had talked about when you are a caregiver and your employer is doing a health and productivity focus, and they incent or disincent, you know, or penalize you for not keeping up with regular doctor visits and not exercising or not eating well, yet the very nature of caregiving Whether it's that your mom, much as being Fred's mom, my mom lived in a continuous care facility. Unfortunately, for most of the time, was living in her own apartment. So I wasn't actually rendering direct care. But it was still, employers have this onus. It's hard to exercise. It's hard to food shop. It's hard to cook. Kevin, do you want to talk a little bit about that when you're out there talking to employees about what caregiving is like in general, and then most importantly, what is it like on their health? And to some degree, what Fran was talking about, their physical health, their emotional health.
Right, and I think you hit it on the head in that employers, we're all trying to encourage, employees to be healthier, but it kind of runs in the face of, and if you just look at the numbers, the average family caregiver is doing 20 to 30 hours of work, extra stuff a week. Now, I don't mean bathing and dressing. It might be just getting a prescription, taking someone to a doctor appointment. But if you add 20 to 30 hours of extra work, on top of everything else, we have going on with the kids and the gym, kids soccer and our full-time jobs, the first thing you are going to forget about is yourself. And you really, that has to be, one of the mantras we all carry forward is you have to take care of yourself first. Lisa Gibbons says, take the oxygen first, just like on the plane. That has to be the priority because, one skipped or two skipped mammograms, one skipped, two skipped colonoscopies, and you're ending up with a manageable early stage cancer that's now, stage four. And that is just a challenge. But it goes back to our human nature, right? We're going to put ourselves last in these situations, and we have to flip that around. And I think employers have a big role in talking about that. Like you said, you have managers that understand this. What if you're reporting to a 30-year-old? And I know there's 30-year-olds that are doing adult caregiving. But in general, if I'm a 50-year-old going through this and I'm reporting to 30, 35-year-old that is still 10, 15 years away from this issue, that's not that manager's problem. It's the organization's problem to educate that manager. And that's what we really hope more employers are doing, is getting the leadership together saying this is a problem from a productivity, from a health care, from everything, and we've got to educate each other that haven't been through this yet about really what's needed and what we can do to help.
I think one of the ways that I want to piggyback on some of what you're saying in terms of putting yourself first and then the reality around that. So one of the ways that I work with some clients is to consider the ideas of social support. And a lot of times we're very used to the ideas of social support and social motivation with weight loss success stories or quit tobacco cessation success stories. I think another way that we can bring some relief to people with caregiving, excuse me, and here I'm talking elder care, child care, or tackling both, is to look to see how can we bring in social supports and social networks to support those who are in the throes of it. There's so much going on with conversation about technology, but the very idea of connecting people through technology to others, patient support communities, but also people who could come in and maybe do your grocery shopping so you could go for take a walk and let your mind and your body recover. Things like that are ways that employers could just create the channel and step back and let the magic happen, if you will.
That's an interesting point, Fran. I have two employer clients I worked with about a year ago. Neither knew the other was working with me, but both on their own actually decided to tackle the food issue of caregiving, meaning that they developed a process where people could identify that they were in a caregiving issue, whether it was an adult, either meaning your parent or your spouse, or whether it was a child. And while you were in it, one actually sent a chef to your home once a week, and the chef would prepare a week's worth of meals and contain them and freeze them. You know, exactly. Me too. And then the other was they took advantage of the food delivery services from grocery chains, and they would have a week's worth of groceries delivered to the person's house once a week. So I think that's interesting. You know, I do notice we have that 610 person is trying again. So I'm going to let them in, Fran, while you may take on off from where I dropped off, unless they sign on quickly.
Let's
okay,
see.
Our
610
caller, are you there? I am so sorry, 610, but for some reason you keep calling and we cannot hear you. Okay, well, then
if you're on Twitter, you can reach out to me at F.E. Melnitt, and we could see if we could help you out there.
And
in the meantime, you are a mystery caller.
You are. I did open up, just so you know, caller, the flash chat on Blog Talk Radio as well. So if you have access to your computer, you can check there, and I'll follow the chat as well. So anyway, I mean, I just thought that was incredibly intuitive, because I can share with me personally I was very fortunate that in the worst of my mother's situation, she made a requirement that before I could see her, I had to have exercise that day. Now, I could have lied, I suppose, but I was never really very good at lying to my parents, at least as an adult. I would tell you I stretched the truth when I was a teenager. But I did, and that definitely kept me sane. I will tell you the eating suffered quite a bit, because I didn't even have time to food shop. And grocery shop, never mind, you know, make meals. So I didn't eat badly, but I ate lots of the same thing repetitively, which isn't very interesting. And I could see where it would be really easy to eat fast food, which I fortunately chose not to do. And I will tell you, Kevin, I canceled appointments and preventive checkups because the idea of talking to another physician was like the last thing I really wanted to do at that point. So I get it.
Well, and you're lucky it went well. But your mom was a pretty special person to say, you know, gotta exercise before you spend time with me. That's pretty special.
Yeah, I do have to say she definitely nailed that one. But in reality, it's hard, because to your point, 20-30 hours. And the other thing perhaps we could talk about, because we've inferred it here, but we haven't specified it, is, Kevin, I learned from you that the average person in caregiving is spending between $10,000 and $30,000 of their own money every year in this process. And I can verify that number is correct. And if you do not have the savings, or if your parents didn't, and it falls on you, and you yourself do not have the savings, you're making some really difficult decisions about how to help your parent. And that's one thing I've talked to employers about, because it's not that employers aren't aware. It's employers are so overwhelmed that they don't know where to begin and they don't know what to do next. Because I said, let me tell you the real issue with your employees, because I know I'm blanking on Sean's last name, but the head of HR for Comcast NBC Universal has indicated that he has switched all of their wellness programs away from physical wellness and toward financial wellness. And the reason he did that is he found that at every pay level, there was at least a recognizable percentage of people taking loans from their 401k plan, and a lot of it was being driven by caregiving. And so I don't know how to solve, are we responsible, is an employer responsible for helping when a parent, has exhausted their resources perhaps, which is the case for many, didn't have the resources, and are they responsible for helping the employees? It's a difficult one, but it's a reality because it's an expensive problem. So, Kevin, is that stat right, 10 to 30,000? Am I remembering that correctly?
Yes, it is. And it's, and when you think too, that's present day dollars. If that sat in your 401k for another, 10 or 20 years till you retire, you can double that at least once, hopefully. And so that it's your future retirement, but we're going to do it, right? We'll say, hey, it's mom. Hey, it's dad. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do this if we have the resources to do it. but it's, you know, it's really an issue, as you say, not only from our health, but our financial health.
Mm-hmm. I do know one major insurer that is actually looking at the idea, and this would be really sort of dicey, of providing services to help employees figure out how to set their parents up so they qualify for Medicaid. Now, we do know at some point the federal government's probably going to try to figure out, and the state government, well, frankly, the state governments, because it's Medicaid, are going to have to try to figure out how to do this. But, you know, as many people probably know, one of the things that people with at least more access to elder care lawyers and people who are willing to talk about this openly, that people move their assets into a trust, an irrevocable trust. And as long as they've done that within, I think most states have moved to a 5-year window. It used to be 3. Their parent can then qualify for Medicaid, which removes some of the financial burden. But there actually is an insurer who's looking at, you know, is that something legitimate? They know it's a legitimate service. Is it something that would be acceptable to do to help employees? Interesting question.
Yeah, that's getting dicey, as you say. But the bigger challenge is will you know, Medicaid, you know, look at the demographics. That we're already spending 50% of every Medicaid dollar on long-term care, and the boomers haven't even started to really hit that issue yet. So, I mean, it's just going to be a matter of we can all switch it to Medicaid, but then Medicaid, you know, going to be in a world of hurt. And besides the fact that most home care services and all of the preventative and early intervention stuff isn't Medicaid, Medicaid's nursing home. And,
right.
You know, no
That's
one wants
exactly
to be there.
Right. Right. And most
right. And we haven't had the opportunity yet, and nor do I know that we will, because we have 3 minutes left in our show to really go into some of what we're seeing with the connected home, aging in place, aging with grace, some of the changes that are starting, or some of the entrance into this area that are bubbling up and are at the CES show this week, that we'll only see more of, particularly as this boomer group, that bubble starts to hit, and that's a real, both a need but a market opportunity, to be realistic.
Yeah, I got to add, though, on the, you know, the aging in place, and trust me, I think all of us would want to sign up for that program. But I can tell you, toward the end in my mom's case before she elected to move to Connecticut, over time as we age, there does become a social isolation. That more and more people's friends move or die or aren't there. And so the interesting part about living in communities is that you do have a community even though you lose some of your freedom.
Exactly.
And so that's a tough one too.
Exactly.
Well, I know that we are coming up on the end of our time. What is normally a 30-minute show is going today be a 45-minute show because the topic was just too juicy, and we had such good input from somebody who sees the breadth of the field to two individuals, Tracy and Fred, who are experiencing it individually and then as a manager and an employee. I can't tell you how much Carol and I have appreciated this conversation. It's been one we've been having separately and together for at least a year, if not more, and we plan to continue the conversation and even have the idea of a book at some point in time, but we'll see where that goes.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to thank the three of you and all the listeners for making our first open mic show as rewarding as it is. We are very sorry, 610, that we never got you on the show. Yet I feel that this was what we wanted. To have an open call that would have the real stories from the individuals who listen and work these different issues as we do every day. I would like to thank Carol, as always, for being a dynamic co-host and a fast-on-her-feet thinker. And I would like to let our listeners know that our next show will be the first Wednesday of the month, as always, which is February 4th at noon. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone, and we'll see you next month.